Welcome back to Expert Instruction, the Teach by Design podcast, where we dive deeper into the research surrounding student behavior by talking with the people implementing these practices, where they work, and with the students they support. I'm Megan Cave.
I'm Danielle Triplett.
Oh my God, every time I say that, I feel like I'm on NPR.
You sound like you're on NPR, Megan. It's amazing.
I've gotten compliments. I attended a meeting just recently, just 4 minutes ago, and they were like, Ooh. That microphone, my God.
The recording studio, your home, your new office. Yeah,
I know. That's what I said. I was like, I'm going to sound like this all the time. I loved our conversation today with our guest. It was, let me just say, without saying too much, it was such a needed conversation for both Danielle and I. Wouldn't you say that?
100% on personal levels,
professional, yes. Personal,
yes,
emotional.
It really hit home. Yeah,
certainly. A conversation with Dr. Nicole Holland Sims is always welcome. Today, she joined us to talk about belonging, which it turns out is a word that I never knew could describe so much. But even just hearing it now, I get excited about what can come of pursuing belonging in educational spaces. Mm-hmm. Danielle and I decided to take a minute to reflect on the places where we feel like we have experienced belonging. And Danielle, do you want to tell them what we noticed?
Yeah, because we were kind of brainstorming about how to do this intro. And then we were like, okay, well, we'll each share where we feel belonging. And as we started getting into that, we realized it's not always with like a bigger group, right? Yeah. Like immediately, it's like, oh, well, I feel like I belong maybe at the University of Oregon. And it's like, well, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And the more we talked about it, the more we realized in reflection that it's in smaller groups that we feel like we belong. But as more people get added, it gets harder to identify that. So like Megan and I, when it's you and me, we feel these things. We feel appreciated, validated, treated fairly, and accepted by one another.
Yeah.
Now we can go into a meeting with 8 more colleagues and that dynamic changes.
It shifts. And so the idea of thinking about creating spaces of belonging at a school, even in a classroom where you've got 30 kids maybe in there, or that class changes, like you're in a high school and you teach a subject. And so now you have to create belonging for 5 different classes that come and go through your day. What that work might actually entail, because we're talking about larger spaces and how difficult that can be. And so maybe something that we would ask all of you listening is just to reflect on the spaces where you feel like you've belonged. Are they big? Are they small?
Right.
How have you experienced it before? And as you listen to our guest, consider what that might mean for you in your work as you look to create spaces of belonging in schools. Joining us today, speaking of our guest, her name is Dr. Nicole Holland Sims, and she describes herself as a systems level thinker. And you know, we love a systems level thinker.
We are systems level thinkers too, Nicole.
Yes. She describes herself as a systems level thinker with a love for consultation. She's such a people person. She's a school psychologist by training who has experiences in coaching, leading, and then also on expanding on current research, looking for those practical, transformative solutions. Nicole, we told this to her at the end of the podcast. Nicole is the kind of person whose energy truly fills whatever space she's in and inspires everyone to reach a little bit higher for our dreams. We learned so much from her today about belonging, and we know that you guys are going to learn right along with us.
Yes, agreed, Megan. I think actually the three of us doing the podcast, I had a real sense of belonging. Like that was a great example of that.
Absolutely.
Did that for us. So listen in and enjoy.
Well, hi, Nicole. Thanks for being with us again. It's been a while since you've joined us on this podcast.
I'm excited to be back. It's always a fun time.
Oh, I hope that is true.
It's true.
We like to have a little fun around here.
I wasn't around during the podcast round one with Nicole, so I'm really glad we get to
I know.
Hey. Yep.
I know.
The more the merrier.
Nicole and I saw each other just recently, actually, in person, because you are not a West Coaster, but we saw each other out in Pennsylvania, and she told me to go to, what is it called, Hershey World?
Chocolate World.
Chocolate World.
Uh-huh. Hershey Chocolate World.
And my God, that was the best. It was the best advice. You fully vacation planned for me and our colleague, Alan. But we did not actually ask you to come here to talk about Chocolate World. today we wanted to have you on because of the work and the focus that you've had on belonging in schools. And I just love that word so much. And so I was just curious, as a way to start, we were wondering how you came to this concept or this idea of belonging, and it became a focus for you in your work.
I love the term belonging as well.
Oh, it's so nice.
And really, I wasn't even thinking about that term way back when I started the PBIS journey that many of us have been on.
Right.
And primarily when I was working for our state network that does training and technical assistance, we were focused on disproportionality and discipline. And that's what really drove me to want to know, like, why does PBIS seem to work well in certain places or for certain students? But then for other groups, it doesn't have the same level of outcome. So that sort of piqued my interest into wanting to know, how can we make it more accessible and available to everyone? And there's been a lot of work done in that area. And then expanding beyond that for the discipline side, it's a lot of work that's been done around equitable practices across a number of sectors, public, private, corporate, all of them.
Yeah.
And what I noticed is that people had a hard time digesting what it meant to create these spaces that were equitable. And I stumbled upon this book called Belonging Through a Culture of Dignity by Floyd Cobb and John Cronapple. And I have to say, it was the game changer. Like, you know how you have that one text or that one, for instance, podcast or something that just gives you what you were looking for to make it make sense? That's what that book did for me. And what the authors really talked about is that we do this work well when we're trying to uncover root cause and why disproportionality happens, but there's something missing. And it's the ability for people to understand the why.
Yeah.
Why should we do these practices in a different way?
Mm-hmm.
Why should we make these places more accessible?
Mm-hmm.
And the why is belonging. Mm-hmm. So no one can tell someone whether or not they belong. That's a very subjective, personal thing. But what we can do, and how I kind of connected it to PBIS as a framework, was we're designing the infrastructure and the system that we want these practices to exist in so that belonging is available and something that someone can access in the way that they are perceiving their connection to whatever environment they're in. So that's really where I sort of said, a light bulb moment.
Yeah.
And that this may be the way to have people from all walks of life fully understand the purpose of why these practices are necessary. So that's kind of how I stumbled into that work and then made it really a core value for the work that I do.
Yeah, I think you're so right. It's something you feel. You can't, like, I can sit here all day and be like, Danielle, no, you do belong here. You do. And she can be like, I don't feel that, you know? And so it's through those actions and the feeling that you create in your space that lets someone access what what we call belonging, and like to know that they actually do belong there.
Right.
To feel that.
I love that. It also reminds me of Nicole. I know it's kind of a catchphrase in education, but we also often hear the term like, remember your why, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's a little overused. Maybe some educators get, you know, here's this again, but that is what brings us to do this work. And I think education truly is a calling for those of us who've chosen this field. And I think creating a sense of belonging is something that, you know, is part of that why we're doing this work, really. It's for the kids, right?
It seems like that's been such, I don't know, that's been like a constant, it sounds like, in your work, because that's exactly what we talked about last time, was finding purpose in this work and learning why it is that we're doing it in the first place. And we just spoke with our friend Mary up in Washington last month. You know Mary?
I do.
Yeah.
She's fantastic.
She's center.
Yeah. So we just talked to her last month, and she echoes exactly what you're talking about, that it's important to define a shared value so that you have something to come back to when you run into like a wall or something that blocks you from accomplishing the things that you want to do, so that everybody can come back and work together to try and find that solution. You know, that we all have to remember, why are we doing this in the first place? And so this idea of you're just putting a word to something that I think we can all describe in different ways, but if we can really focus on that one word, then it resonates for each of us in different ways.
Absolutely. And quite honestly, the word, again, when I stumbled upon it, I initially had a reaction at first, like, is this watering down?
Sure.
Is this making it too palatable? Mm-hmm. Are we really saying what we need and want? And the more I got engrossed in the book and what they were describing, I was like, but this is the point. The point is to help people get to a place where they can understand the why and their own why, and understand that the purpose of what they're doing has impact beyond just one student or a certain group of students. It does show up for every human.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So let's get into our next question, Nicole. So how do you actually define belonging in educational spaces?
Yeah, so there's a couple definitions that I think I've really anchored my work around. I'm really hyping up Cobb and Cronapple. They did not pay me to say all of that, but thankfully I'm connected with them, so they'll probably chuckle at that too. Uh-huh. But their definition, I think, is really clear and concise enough that people can digest it. So there are four indicators that they speak about, and they are to feel appreciated, to feel validated, to be treated fairly, and to be accepted. So those four things, and I'm thinking of the surveys that we give to students, staff, families, we want as much as we can for questions to sort of put us in those directions of those four indicators for us to know if belonging is possible. So they say that if someone is experiencing one or hopefully all four of those indicators, they are experiencing a sense of belonging. And that is primarily in the K-12 space. Mm-hmm. The other part of that definition that I really lean into is that when people feel like they belong, they aren't distracted and worried about being perceived as a stereotype or something that doesn't represent their multidimensional personhood. Now, that's a mouthful. Essentially, what we're saying is that I identify as Black, I identify as a woman, I identify as Christian. I'm listing all of the things that make Nicole, Nicole. Mm-hmm. But if I come into a space and I have to put one of those pieces of my multidimensional personhood to the side in order to fit in, then I haven't experienced true belonging, which goes back to those four that I just spoke to. Mm-hmm. So that's the definition that I really hold tight to. There are a number of others. We could talk about Jeffrey Cohen, who wrote a book about the science of belonging. And he talks about as a species that we seek connection and need connection. So there's a lot of different ways for us to interpret it, but it really gets back to those four for me.
The thing that I really like about what you said too is when I think about those four things, being appreciated, being validated, being treated fairly, being accepted, Danielle and I have also talked a lot about trying to help people understand what it means to build relationships with students. Yes. Yes. And it can feel like that's another kind of catchphrase or another little terminology that we use that is, it lacks a really clear definition of what does that mean? And for some of us, it's like very intuitive and we know how to reach each other and really connect with each other and build those stronger relationships. But it's not always intuitive and it's not always natural for a process to do that with everybody, you know, and as for educators, we're asking them to build relationships with every student. And that's not always easy. And I think these four things can really kind of give us ways that we can build those relationships. Like, how have I appreciated Nicole today? What are the ways that I validated Danielle in her experience struggling through the math lesson that we just did? How can I accept some part? Like, is there a part of some student that I just really don't accept outwardly is there a way that I can be more intentional about showing that I see them and that part, and that that also is acceptable in class? Like, are there those kinds of things? It just like gives it a really tangible thing, which I love. Like, so anyway, I really like these four items.
I want to, I want to add to that, because when I was working with Dr. Rhonda Nace on the ISLA grant, I'm sure Nicole knows her too, but we focus groups with middle school students, because we were talking about exclusionary discipline and really going to the foundation that we wanted to create strong relationships with schools as that starting point before we talk about exclusion and discipline and those pieces. But what the kids said is very much what's in line with these four components, but especially the treated fairly one. Like, kids are so quick to point out and notice, like, oh, the way that Miss Triplett treated Megan versus Nicole or something like that is just different. And even if it's subtle, or the tone of voice, the eye contact they make or don't make, and those kind of things. Like, so I think as we're talking about this, like, we don't do enough of that, I feel like, in schools to really listen to the kids. Sometimes we're making, a lot of times we're the adults, we're making the decisions, we're on these leadership teams. But as always, I'm plugging student voice and elevating that, because the students, they're the ones experiencing this, and they are real savvy. They will see where there is a lack of fairness or something like that amongst staff.
I'm so thankful that you raised that up, Danielle, because I think that's a core component of belonging too. I know that some of the things that I hear from people when I ask, you know, how do you experience belonging, or how do you know that you're having belonging available to you? One of the things they say is that I feel heard. And so I think from youth all the way to adult, just that feeling that someone actually took time to listen to me, and they weren't quickly responding, they actually took time and processed what I was saying. It goes a long way. And I love when you said elevating their voice. I learned about voice agency and expression, and how valuable it is for students to be able to have their voices amplified. It's critical.
Danielle and I talked to Nicole last week, I guess it was just last week, just a few days ago. And something that both of us wrote down when we talked to you was the difference between giving someone a voice and amplifying their voice. Yes. And that really resonated for the two of us too, that for someone to feel like they belong, you're not allowing them to speak, you're elevating that voice and echoing it, you know. Are there times where you, like, what in your experience, when have you experienced belonging, and when did you know it, Nicole?
Ooh, that's so good. And I have to kind of think back a little ways.
Yeah.
But I will say that for me, most recently was when I was asked to come to our Department of Education, our Pennsylvania Department of Education, to be a special assistant. And that was one of the few times in my career where I truly felt not only that I belonged, but that my skill set was trusted.
Yeah.
And that right there, that's the appreciation, validation, acceptance part for me. Our secretary at the time, shout out to Dr. Noe Ortega, he invited me to be a part of his cabinet. And I just appreciated that when he did that invite, he sort of told everyone else to let me be, if that makes sense. Trust what he's doing.
Yeah.
If he does it, then that's what we're doing.
We're following Nicole. Yeah, not the other way around.
And there's something about that, particularly, and I may get a little weird for a minute, but particularly when you're a woman in a male-dominated space, or when you're a person of color in a space where it's not that many of you, to be able to have that level of trust and autonomy, it's pivotal. And so I truly felt among that group of people a true sense of belonging. I've continued to have glimmers of that in various spaces, but that I would say would be the space where I felt probably at my highest pinnacle of belonging at work.
That's so good. That's so good.
Yes.
That's so good. So we've talked a lot about feeling, belonging being a feeling. And around here, we don't talk a lot about that. We talk a lot about things that are measurable.
Okay. Yeah.
So we love a data point. We sure do around here. And so the other thing that Nicole, you're right here. The other thing that Danielle and I have been talking about this whole year so far is the ways that we can leverage the data systems and practices of PBIS to continuously improve upon the culture that we build in schools. Yeah. And so a question that we have for you is, are there some of these elements of PBIS that we can really lean into that would help us to create more spaces of belonging in our schools?
Absolutely. So
I would imagine there are. Yeah.
There definitely are. And I can so appreciate you, Megan, putting forward being data driven.
Yeah.
Because I'm also a data nerd. And yeah. I think in order to make good practice, we got to have some data to look at.
Yes.
So definitely on board with you there.
Okay, good.
When I'm out in the field talking about PBIS in general, those three main components are always at the forefront of those discussions. And I think how I articulate them is, like I said earlier, the infrastructure. And it's a framework that's almost like a house.
Yeah.
So when you're building the house, you have to have sound supports, a sturdy foundation. And I feel like the system data practices intersections create that frame for your house. Ooh. And then once that house is built, now we can put in some really strong practices that are data driven to make the house livable, like the good couch that you want.
Ooh, the good couch with the perfect spot.
You know, or the big screen TV or whatever it is. It makes the house function. It makes it livable. It makes it a place where people feel safe.
A home.
Welcome, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when you think of systems, data, and practices, we can break down all three of those in very clear ways. But one of the things I'll say around systems is your team. Mm. So when I do this work, and I'm sure as many that are listening do this work around PBIS, your team can make or break your implementation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that teaming discussion, who's around the table, how do we operate with each other? What are our rules of engagement? Really set the tone on whether or not those four indicators can even live and breathe among us as the implementers. Mm-hmm. So, got to start there at that systems level. Policy then also can bridge belonging and make sure that it is available. If the policies are co-constructed, co-designed, mm-hmm. Speaking to your current population and not stuck in the 1980s and 70s,
yeah.
You may want to revisit some of
dust it off.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. Or dust it off. So those are things that at the systems level are highly influential in creating spaces of belonging, along with professional learning. Mm. So one thing that I've learned in my work has been one-off spray and pray trainings.
Yeah.
Don't do anything.
Yeah.
So you got to have that embedded coaching, those application opportunities. Mm-hmm. And that's another way, Megan, you made a really excellent point on, we say build relationships, but people can't operationalize that.
That's right.
So how do you put that into a PD, mm-hmm. but also then apply what we're learning? Mm-hmm. So that's the systems. On the practices side, because we know policy drives practice. So that's why I wanted to start with the policy component. Yep. When we get to the practices, and I'm seeing this in the circle, so I think it's... But nevertheless, when you get to that section, we're talking about feedback and acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Danielle, I think you hit that on the head when you talked about how do we listen to students to know what type of acknowledgements they prefer. First and foremost, because Megan may love for me to make a big deal about what she just did in class and be excited and say, Megan's amazing.
All day. Yeah.
And, if I did that to Danielle, she may go, oh my gosh, why is she embarrassing
so embarrassed?
Me?
Yeah.
So embarrassing.
Right. So because that preference is so valuable, I would want my feedback and acknowledgement to have meaning for you, not create a space where you're now feeling even more isolated or disconnected. So practices really lend themselves to that component. And people think PBIS means just rewards, and it does not.
No.
So I just want to dispel that
say
myth.
It louder for people in the back.
For people in the back, say it louder. So, it is not just about those things. Mm-hmm. feedback and acknowledgement are a part of a continuum. And in addition, a continuum of consequences. So there's always learning that's taking place, no matter what we're doing. Classroom is the other part, I would say, around practices that we can't just have it happen in a vacuum at the system level. Mm-hmm. It has to be occurring at the classroom level, going back to those acknowledgments that happen right in the classroom. Mm-hmm. That's another way of building relationships, by the way. And then data.
It is.
So, finally,
it's the why. Data. It's the why of the why. Of the acknowledgments is to build relationships. Yeah.
That's right. Period. End of story. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So on the data side of things, this is where I think you both are going to be super excited because as we think about PBIS apps and the different platforms that give us some of this rich, robust information, when I think of data, you both have hit this as well. Data does not just have to be a number.
Mm-hmm.
Data can be qualitative in nature as well. And it wouldn't it be amazing to have both?
Yeah.
So that we could substantiate what we're seeing in the numbers and then have something to back up what we're seeing in those outcomes. Outcome data is another way for us to know whether or not belonging is available. And the one component that I'll add to the kind of round out the data conversation, Dr. Robert Belfonts from Johns Hopkins University talks about early warning indicators for being off track or on track to graduate. He calls them the ABCs, attendance, behavior, and course performance.
Right.
He now has well-being ABCs, agency, belonging, and connectedness, because what he's learned over his research is that those three heavily influence those outcome measures of attendance, behavior, and course performance. So when we have those things happening, and Danielle, I keep looking at you because we have to operationalize those things, right? Mm. We can't just say them. We have to give people the steps and the skills to know, how do I elevate or amplify agency and advocacy?
Right.
How do I focus on creating spaces of belonging? And how do I secure connections? That's the relationship part too. Mm. So for me, that's how I intersect all of those three components of the framework to embed belonging in the work.
I love that.
I love that. Wow.
We of course are big fans of surveying students about their experiences. The climate surveys offer that. And then, like you were saying, getting their actual words, there's the feedback and input surveys also do that for both on both sets for students, families, and staff. So the other component of all of this, of course, is that we often focus on our students and whether they feel like they belong or how are they experiencing school. But we have to talk about teachers and we have to talk about our staff. We have to talk about families. That it's the larger school-wide community that we serve. It's important to elevate that across all of those populations, I think. But then the other part of that too is that what you're giving us with those other ABCs are some lenses through which we can look at those data. So we can try and ask ourselves, you know, about what do we see, and do we see that our students are telling us more about their agency at school, or are they talking more about their how connected they feel at school? So I think I really like that as a way to try and approach those data. And the other thing I would say too, is that we always encourage people to disaggregate their data, to break apart those data and to look at how individual students, student groups experience school. You talked about, do I have to leave one part of my identity at the door in order to feel like I fit in? And so when we ask students about their identity and to try and select a group that they feel that they are part of, when we look at our data, our outcome data, survey data, whatever it is, we can start to make some interpretations about which students feel like they belong and which students feel like they have to put this identity on hold in order to feel like they belong in our school. So that would be the only thing that I would add to what you said, is to try and encourage everyone listening to ask students about their identities and to read their data through those lenses.
Yes.
And ask those questions about the new ABCs that you just taught us. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Another really quick term that I wanted to make sure I don't forget to say is belonging uncertainty. It was a newer term for me, but to make it make sense for everyone, we all at some point in our lives, I'm overgeneralizing a bit, but have probably experienced belonging uncertainty. And so the example that I'll give just to kind of make it make the most sense is, let's say Megan is having a party at her house and she has invited me. And I say to her, well, what should I wear? And she says, well, just show up. We're just happy to have you. You know, come on.
Okay? I'm thinking of Mean Girls immediately.
Right. It's like the ultimate setup, right?
Yeah.
So I show up, and because, and I'll just because you both are now knowing me a little bit better, I can be a little extra. Okay, I'll leave it at that. And so if I show up at Megan's house, I may be in a full-length ball gown, right? Because I want to stand out. I want to extra.
Oh my gosh. Please show up at my house in a full-length ball
gown. Yes, please.
I will run to my room, and I will put on my most elegant gown to match you.
But you see you just did, Megan? You said, I will run to my room and put on my most elegant gown. Because if you didn't do that, and I showed up, and now I kind of am reading the room, and Danielle, I'm just picking on you just for a minute. Danielle happens to whisper to Megan, did you tell her to wear that kind of dress?
Yeah.
Nicole and is always Megan's wearing that dress.
Yeah. And Megan goes, well, I did tell her to just show up, you know, whatever she wanted. But now I'm reading the room and I'm seeing people give me glances, whisper. And now the discomfort is coming for me. That is that feeling of belonging uncertainty.
Got it.
And you want to quickly escape it.
Yep.
So you'll exit. That's a really, you know, simple example, easy enough. But imagine our students who, as soon as they walk in a door, whether it's a classroom door, school door, whatever. And let's not even, Megan, you said this. Let's not forget staff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who walk into their workplaces. And immediately had that overwhelming feeling of, do I really belong here? You're not productive. You're overly consumed with that thought and that feeling. So I didn't want to lose sight of that, because that's another way for us to unpack what that feeling of belonging may not feel like. And it's the opposite. So,
I like that a lot, because it's like also, it helps to think about this gray area. Like, maybe I thought I belonged, but maybe I don't actually. And and that it's like that gray space where we can really do some good work, I think.
Yep.
What you said, Nicole. Well, I love the metaphor with the dress, and I'm a little extra too, so I would be with you, like, fancy. And
you would not be alone if Danielle was coming over.
But it reminded me, you know, I started out as a middle school language arts teacher in my career, and I came out of graduate school, like, ready to go, wanted to be a teacher my whole life, got a job, was really excited. But the school I was working at, I had that sense what you're describing. I did not feel like I belonged. I did not feel like I could show up as my authentic self every day with everyone. Some people I did. The school counselor was like my bestie. I had a real ally in her. But, you know, with my team, like, I did not feel like I belonged. So I totally get what you're saying. And I think that it does start with the adults, because that's the culture of the school, right? And kids are savvy to that as well. They pick up on it for sure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a big topic. It's hard to kind of unpack that. And it's harder to change adult behavior than it is kids often, as you know. But I just remembered that experience, and how when I then left that school after teaching 2 years and went to another school, it was I felt belonging. It was very team oriented. Like, it was just a night and day difference. And I was much more productive. I was much more excited to get up and go to work in the morning, all of those things. So I just feel for kiddos that maybe don't even have the agency of the choice to say, like, gosh, this school doesn't fit for me, but this is their school. This is their neighborhood place. They don't have an option B like I did after 2 years. Like, all right, I'm going to try something else. This isn't fit for me. So, yeah.
You just spoke big facts.
Thank you.
So if they don't have the choice, how do we make the choice livable? How do we make the house livable?
Yes, please. Yep. Yep. They deserve that. I agree. Right. All right. So let's dive into our last question about teams and how tell it. We're curious, Nicole, about your work with teams and how our teams can begin the work of evaluating the level of belonging in their schools. Like, how do we really dive into that? And what are some of those tangible things that folks listening right now can do to increase the sense of belonging for their staff and students?
Absolutely. So teams, as I said at the beginning, they can make or break any of this. And so first off, you want to make sure that your team is pretty well-rounded. And what I mean by that is that you have tapped into a lot of different people with a lot of different perspectives who can be very honest in that team space. And that takes some work at the team level to create a space where it's safe to disagree. It's safe to ask questions. It's safe to be honest and vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so those are like the first steps that I think are valuable to even beginning this journey. You have to start with the people that are around the table. Following that, because we're talking more internal school staff, mm-hmm. you want to be intentional next about engaging families, engaging community members, engaging students. And that sounds easy. It is not easy. And so I want to give a couple little ideas to make this a little bit more easy. Perfect. When you're thinking about what this could look like.
Yeah.
So for instance, we hear from teams sometimes, we really are uncomfortable bringing families into our meetings because we don't want them to hear bad things about the school.
Mm.
Or we're afraid that they may take it and run and hit social media and tell all our business and all that stuff. Yeah. What I have found is that when you invite families, I would say be intentional about the invitation. And what I mean by that is you may not invite them to every monthly meeting that you have, but you may put your calendar out to say every quarter, we're going to have families as a part of our meeting. And through that, we're going to allow families to speak to us, to elevate concerns, to elevate positives. And it will be a feedback listening circle. So Danielle, when you talked about the focus groups, that's kind of in my head how I envision these quarterly opportunities. Mm-hmm. So there's always a consistent communication. Similarly, you could have an in-tandem student team that's operating right in line with that school-based team, or you could operate with the same quarterly cadence mm-hmm. and have students come to this group and have that same feedback loop happen.
What a good idea. Those are
love that. Yeah.
Perfect. See, I got some support. So if you think about it in those ways, to me, that's a really smart step mm-hmm. to begin this process that doesn't mean you have to start all over again or mm-hmm. totally dismantle everything you've been doing. These mm-hmm. are little things that you can do to just enhance your practice. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the main message I would want people to hear when I'm talking about the implementation process. You're always in this continuous cycle of improvement, should be.
Yes.
And so as you're going through it, you should be seeing, you know, we could enhance somewhere or we could do that just a little bit better. Mm-hmm. That's what I would want you to focus on. If you're looking on ways to enhance belonging, build belonging, mm-hmm. these things should be a part of your system already. You just have to tap into them and operationalize them, right? So the building of the relationships, who are we not connected to? Mm-hmm. If I'm a teacher, which students have I not built rapport with? Mm-hmm. And I think, Megan, you hit that on, do I know who they are? Yeah. There might be some things about them that I haven't even thought about,
I don't even know.
So, mm-hmm. Right. So doing some inventory there, doing some dialogues and conversations, they go a long way. So I'm giving you some of those little tangible starting places because each context is also different. So mm-hmm. don't have this like magic bullet to say, do this and then this and
so
then this.
So annoying.
Right. I'm sorry. But these are some things that you can embed again in your current structures, beginning at that systems level. Remember systems, data, practices.
Yep. So
starting with systems, how do we start our work in a way that has a solid foundation? So we can build the rooms, build the houses, and make sure that the furniture can fit and that we can use it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like, I always love a small tangible because it gives you like a, it opens the door, you know, and yeah. then you start focusing on that small, tiny thing and then it feels comfortable and you start to build what you were talking about. You start to build trust as a team that we can talk about these things and it's not so scary and we can, mm-hmm. we can be open and honest with each other. It's safe. And then, once the door is open, you start to like walk through it and you can start to tackle something that might even be a bigger deal than you originally set out to solve, or it might not be. I don't know. But you're right. Every context is different and these small things can help us all like start those conversations and start to be more intentional about creating a space for everyone to feel successful. Nicole, thank you so much. This has been an incredible time talking with you. As always, you make this work feel so fun. And I have like a new energy around it every time I talk to you about anything, chocolate world, belonging, whatever. Like I just get excited. I get excited. And so you have a natural gift for helping people to, or to create spaces of belonging for, wherever you go. And so we're grateful to learn from you and to share your experiences and expertise with everybody listening. Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you, Nicole. I can't wait to meet you in person. I know we have the Northwest PBIS conference coming up next month.
Oh, Nicole, she's going to be front stage, center stage, keynote speaker. Amazing.
Can't wait.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.